right, folks. Well, you know you're in for a treat when you hear that tune, because it means it's time for another week of the Rec Poker Podcast. I'm your host, Jim Reed, Bluffsterini in the home game and at Rec Poker Jim on Twitter. And I have the best freaking job in the world talking poker with my friends here on a strategy forums edition of the podcast every Monday night while we steal each other's chips in the nightly home game. So I have to start by thanking our sponsors, the Running Aces Hotel, Racetrack, and Casino. You can find out more about them at runaces.com. Most of what we do here is free. We're a largely volunteer-based organization, so we depend on support from our sponsors and from our premium members who take part in our training material and study opportunities for only $15 a month. I'd encourage you to give us a try. You can join for free, of course. Most of what we do here is free. All it takes to join Rec Poker is an email address and a smile, but we insist on both. But if you want to take your game to the next level, you can become a premium member for only $5 by using the code RECPOKER at checkout, and it's normally only $15 a month. So for less than 50 cents a day, you can connect with other fun, encouraging poker players over Zoom, study together, play in the free home game club, challenge each other to get better. There's lots of great ways to work on your poker game here at Rec Poker. I hope you give us a try. Now, they let me host the show on Mondays, but I am just one man. It takes a village, a group, a gang of wizards to make the magic happen around here. We call this group the Wrecking Crew. And if you want to find out more about me or the rest of the Wrecking Crew, you can go to rec.poker/crew, or you can just listen up. You're going to meet a few of the members of the Wrecking Crew right here tonight on the show.
I'm Rob Washam, and you can find me as Rabman50 just about everywhere. And every first and third Wednesday, you can find me hosting the book study. Join us.
And I'm Taylor Moss. You can find me on Twitter or X as @Taylor_Moss or as GopherBoyTJM in the Rec Poker home game. And Wednesday nights, you can catch me on Twitch on the Rec Poker channel, twitch.tv/RecPoker. Wednesday nights, we play the home game. Come check us out.
And if you're listening to this, it's likely late February or early March, which means it's time for Marek Madness. This is Taylor Moss's creation. We run this fantastic ladder-style tournament bracket here at Rec Poker. It's free to play in. You can qualify all year long. And all March long on Wednesday nights, instead of Taylor streaming his play on Twitch in the nightly home game, we're going to be broadcasting the series of matches with live commentary from special guests all month long. Taylor, I'll just put you on the spot. It's such a huge project that you do every year with Marek Madness. What's the thing that you enjoy most out of it?
So, first, we do those on Thursdays. Madness is all the Thursdays in. But if you showed up Wednesdays, you'd still see the stream. It would just be me playing the home game. But the following night, we do Marek Madness on Thursday evenings. But it's been fun. This is year number four for us doing Marek Madness. It's really grown into a really fun adventure because people, like, the thing that I love is people get into it. Like, we've done like little like mini hype videos and like talking to your opponent types of things. So it's been really fun for like the build up as we go through there. And then heads up match, you versus your opponent. And then we play down a bracket of 16 players to one eventual winner. So it's a ton of fun and I'm excited for it this year.
It just gets better and better every year. Kudos to you for putting that together. It's just one of the great things about being a member here at Rec Poker. So like I said, folks, check out, join us for free, sign up with an email address and a smile over at rec.poker. I don't think you'll be disappointed. So one of the great free features at Rec Poker are the forums here. You get to share. We have a Discord channel for people that like to do the real-time chatting, and we've got our forums for more kind of long-form strategy analysis. And every week here on the forums edition of the podcast, we're going to pull one post from the forums and talk about it here on the air. This one is posted by 7High11, John Crowell, a fantastic premium member who's been a member for a long time. And you can really see John's play and the way he thinks about poker evolve. He's been a member here for a couple of years now, and it's just great. If you look back in the forums, you can see some of the first posts that John made. You can compare them to some of the posts that he's making now. And he's clearly thinking about poker at a higher level, getting more out of the game, and is a much more fearsome opponent at the tables these days. And I, you know, like to think that his studying here at Rec Poker has contributed to that. It's sure been fun watching him on his journey. So, John, keep posting in the forums and keep joining our strategy sessions. I always get, I always enjoy chatting with you about this kind of stuff. So thanks for your post. So this forum post is called Should I Stay or Should I Go Now? And well, I'll just get us set up here and then we'll analyze the action. So our correspondent writes, from what I've been learning with all of you, I'm much more confident in most decisions I make now, be they right or wrong. But this hand had me scratching my head almost from the start. So this is a $15 progressive knockout on Ignition. 2.5 hours in, but registration's still open for an hour. So minimal ICM considerations. There's an $11 prize pool from each buy-in, and $4 goes to the progressive bounty. We start with 20,000 chips, and we've picked up $4 in bounties so far. So our hero is in the cutoff with 78 big blinds. We're playing full ring, and the villain is under the gun and has us covered with 93 bigs. He says they're in the top 25% of stack size in the tournament, and our correspondent John is third largest at the table. He has 40 hands on the villain. He's running pretty hot, something like 40 VPIP, 40 PFR, 20 three bet eight, and that's an approximation, but that's what it felt like. So our villain under the gun opens for three big blinds. It folds to us in the cutoff. We look down at Jack of Spades, Jack of Diamonds, and raise to nine big blinds. John says, to my surprise, the button cold called from a 98 big blind stack. Everyone else folds back to under the gun, who four bets to 21.5 big blinds. I'll go into what John says, and then maybe we can talk about this a little bit, this first decision point. So there's very little four betting in a low stakes Ignition tournament, says John, and this almost always means aces, kings, or queens. But given his tendencies, I didn't feel like I should fold. But I've also got the button behind me, who could also have a big hand. I don't remember their stats. But they would likely have four bet or three bet a pair. No, they would have likely called four bet a pair stronger than Jack Jack, is what John says. So John says he puts in an uncomfortable call for 12 and a half more big blinds. And to his chagrin, the button also calls. So we're now the effective stack at 56 and a half big blinds. And the pot is 66.8 big blinds. So we've got less than a 1-to-1 SPR. So before we get to the flop, this is an uncomfortable spot. Jacks, you know, Rob's always talking about how jacks are the hand that it's impossible to play correctly, three ways to play, and they're all wrong. What is this a hand? Should we be three betting here? When we do, how do we respond to this four bet? Rob, you unmuted first, so let's hear from you and Taylor on what our thoughts are on this pre-flop action.
I would definitely three bet here. That goes without a doubt. I'm definitely three betting with rare jacks against this type of player. So,
and they're under the gun, which typically means a stronger range, but they're also opening a lot of hands. So we might say that they have more foldable hands in that opening range than other players would.
But they probably have hands that we're ahead of in that range that we could be very happy seeing a flop or even going all in against parts of his range. I mean, there's very few hands that have us totally dominated. There's a lot of hands that we're going to be flipping with, and there's kings, queens, and aces are the only ones that really are ahead of us. So I like the three bet there quite a bit, especially in an Ignition tournament. I think they play a little bit, you know, a little bit softer, a little bit not as, you know, strong as they could, and they tend to be a little bit more passive. So yep. I would definitely three bet there.
Makes sense, Taylor.
Yeah, I don't think the three bet is really too much of a question here. To me, it's really just the sizing that we use with this. I mean, we are, close to 100 big blinds deep, is it? You know, 80 big blinds deep. Like, we're pretty deep stacked here. So it's like, you know, what kind of sizing do we want to use? Typically, when we're shorter stacked in tournaments, like, you can kind of size down your three bets. We go for the exact 3x here, which, I mean, it feels fine, but like, I can see us going smaller. That's my general tendency in like some of these spots. I could also see us going bigger just with the stack size that we have here. So I could see both kind of being valid options. Question for Jim though, like, 80 big blinds, a little bit more cash game focused. Like, what are you going to use for sizing here when you decide to make a three bet from the cutoff versus under the gun? Are you going 3x?
I also kind of default to the 3x when the opening size is suitable for the stack sizes. Like, if they had opened 2 or 2.25 off a deep stack like this, I would also three bet to 9 big blinds. I don't like to let them set the size of my raise by the size of their open when we're deep stacked. I think that makes a lot more sense when you're getting shorter stacked. And I don't really deviate too much from that. If everyone had like over 100 big blinds here in this one, we're going to be effective with 80. I can see you doing everything just one notch higher. So maybe opening a little higher than three, three betting up to 10. But I'm pretty comfortable just going to 9 from 3 here as described. I think that makes sense with these stacked ups.
Yeah, I mean, to me, that's really the only question. Like, you're getting the sense from John thinking this person's playing a decent amount of hands. Like, Jax is the perfect three bet candidate to use against a player like that, that you have that suspicion of, even though they're opening under the gun. So to me, that's totally normal. And then I think we get to like find out a ton about our opponent's ranges in these next few actions. We get a cold call of the three bet from the button off of a deep stack. Like, I can name the hands that they potentially have here. And I think everyone else kind of can too. Like, they have nines, they have tens, they have jacks, they have ace queen, maybe an ace king offsuit if they're really tight. Probably not ace jack, but potential for there too. But it's like, it's those hands. Like, We know exactly what they have. We're doing great against those, generally speaking. So like, we're not too upset to see the cold call of the three bet come in, but we are upset by the four bet. And that's where I think stuff starts to get interesting, because we're in a relatively low stake buy-in tournament. Have we seen the opponent ever get out of line with things? Because this is a very strong line for them to take and really should be queens plus and ace king. That's essentially making up their range. So to me, it puts us in a really tough spot with, even though the cold caller behind us, it has a ton of hands that like we dominate. I'm not loving this hand, and it's not going to be well for, like, it's not going to bode well for us to try and play this post flop either. We're going to constantly be guessing, do they have an overpair, or did they hit, you know, a potential overcard that came on the flop? So I'm not loving the spot once this four bet comes in.
And it's extra gross because this is a knockout tournament and we are the shortest deck of the three players. So they're covering us. We're not covering them. We can't win their bounty. They can win ours, which is not, you know, the ideal spot to be in. But I think, like you say, the button player does cap their range, I think, when they don't four bet themselves. Maybe not 100%. Maybe they do smooth call with some traps in there, but I think they're four betting the hands that we don't want to see. And so it's really that under the gun range that has the strongest hands in it that we're not all that interested in.
One thing,
is there,
you know,
yeah,
it's
please,
a
please.
PKO, Rob. Right?
Yeah,
it's PKO. A PKO. That could mean that they may be doing it with a little wider range if they think they can get a bounty.
Mm-hmm.
So just keeping that in mind, I still agree that the four bet tells me that he's got aces, kings, queens, and at the very worst, eights, king. And if I face that with a guy to act behind me, I think I would be folding my jacks at this point in time.
So I've got two questions for you guys. Or here, Taylor, no, jump in first and then.
I was going to just agree. Like the PKO adds an extra factor to this. Just you're going to get people playing slightly more aggressive than they should in certain spots, or than they would normally, I should say. You should be a little bit more aggressive in PKOs. The other thing that I think is another factor that we need to consider is like, how does the cold call of the three bet influence the under the guns action and what they would take with various holdings?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really important to like think about that. And I might be of the stance that when this happens in lower stake buy-in tournaments or specifically from an opponent that I think is less skilled, I'm more scared by this four bet from the, or yeah, their four bet in this spot than I would be if I assumed that this was a very competent opponent, because it's like they get a chance to squeeze here. And normally people only understand the options to squeeze when it's a raise and a call, and then they can squeeze three bet. But this really is a squeeze four bet that doesn't occur much. It only occurs when someone cold calls a three bet.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, how aware are they of this spot? And I might start to think that they're going to call stuff like ace king from this spot, knowing they're like going multi-way and trying to hit and then, you know, get aggressive with it. And then therefore the four bet might be a little bit more stronger and more weighted towards the queens, kings, and aces. So I'm leaning towards a fold here. It stinks. But it's almost kind of like an exploit that I think I'm making against some players that are just trying to like take this down now or like build up the pot a little bit more when they've got that premium, because people have already put chips in.
Well, and you talked right at the beginning, Taylor, about this being a deeper stacked situation than you typically find in a lot of tournaments. You know, we don't get a lot of spots where there's four bets out there and then there's still room to maneuver. I mean, how often do we even want to have a calling range when facing a four bet? And how face up are we at this point when we three bet and call like this? You know, the cold caller on the button, you expressed their range as being very narrow already. It feels like ours is kind of even more narrow. It's what, like jacks and queens and ace queen suited? And like, is there anything else in there that we're three betting and calling like this?
Yeah. And that was my first reaction too, is like, oh, we can just never call here. Again, I keep talking about these other things. The fact that the button called is the only factor that pushes me towards calling, because like I said before, I think we dominate so much of their range that we almost want to entice them to play. And then it kind of increases our odds against the opponent. I'm still leaning towards fold. I still think fold is how I would choose to play this hand. The only benefit I see towards calling is trying to get the button to come along with.
And we'll get to the flop in just a second, but you know, one of the problems is there's just not that many boards that you want to see with these kind of hands, right? Like it's very difficult to improve without flopping a set. And at that point, you know, if we're calling with jacks here, we really almost like might as well be calling with tens and nines if we three bet them pre-flop, because you're mostly just here to set mine. I mean, you don't have the right odds to do that. That's another argument for folding, because like it's going to be hard to improve this hand post flop.
Agree. And that's like why I think the play when we call also incentivizes the button to go for a call, because they're kind of like, oh, yeah, what can I fold here for like this price? But we know that we have them dominated. But the fact is, we very likely are dominated ourselves. And that's what's making me kind of scared of this spot.
All right. Well, I think that's a good analysis. And I think, you know, generally we shouldn't be looking to call four bets, but we are going to have hands in our three betting range that we fold to four bet, some that we call and some that we five bet with. So it's, you know, it's good to have thought this through. We get a pretty good.
Wait. Oh, yeah, I want to know what hands you are four betting calling with. Well, it's, or a three it's, bet calling with.
I mean, you're kind of looking at it here, honestly. Like, I'm not sure it's a very long list.
Well, it's not that Jax is not on my three bet calling list. Now, it might be if I had a specific read on the opponent. I just don't think I have a three bet calling range. It's either three bet, five bet all in, or fold. I'm trying to think of a hand that I would just call with. I would be more inclined to either jam over the top because I got aces or kings, or fold because I got a hand like ace jack or ace five that I was trying to, you know, it was a bluff three bet trying to get him to fold. Those types of hands, I'm just going to fold. So I want to know what your hand is that is a three bet call.
Yeah. And like Matt Matros, for instance, would say, you know, based on a couple of his books that we've looked at here in the book study, would say, like, just don't have a calling range there, right? Just make it simple and let your opponents exploit you by four betting you with a polarized range. You know, it's not going to happen often enough. These circumstances don't happen often enough that it's worth your time having like a fully well-balanced range in that point. I'm trying to answer you, Rob. Like, I don't have a good answer in mind. Like maybe ace queen suited is like just right there in that, where it's like you want to see a flop, but you're behind. You're behind ace. But again, it's like unless you flop two pair plus, you're really not. You may as well have shoved because you're not going to know. You're not going to be able to make intelligent decisions. Because they've managed to keep all their best hands in there.
And that's why I think that I don't know that there's a three bet call to a four bet range in this spot. I think it's a three bet. You're either going to fold or you're going to jam.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So everyone was pretty sure about three betting the jacks preflop. But
yes,
does that, given that if you don't have a three bet calling range, then should we put some of these hands that don't improve well, that we don't want to get blown off, should we put these into a calling range instead and like three bet more easier candidates like ace, you know, suited aces or things like that, where we don't worry about getting blown off? Or is it just, it's just too strong a hand for that. And we need to sort of get the value out of this hand preflop by three betting.
Sometimes like things like that, I think you try and like rationalize in your head, like, this must make sense. If I was going to fold, if I got raised, why would I raise myself? But it's the same type of logic that you have hands that you're going to open preflop and then fold to raises to go along with it. It's not like, oh man, maybe I should have just folded that to begin with. You know, I didn't need to open A7 offsuit from the cutoff because I'm just going to fold that when I get jammed on. But it's like, no, still the opportunities where the opponent calls make you a ton of money. And then therefore that is like where you're getting the money from. You're not always going to get raised by your opponent. So I'd argue like, don't like level yourselves into thinking things in that train of thought that like, if I must fold this, if I get raised, I must get rid of it. You can go like, it's very similar in other spots. Like when you're on the river, like, should I go for thin value here? Like you're hoping to get called by worse, but there's chance that you're going to get raised and then you're going to have to fold that hand. Well, I should have checked, but that's a huge like leak for some people is to not go for thin value in some of those spots. And this is kind of like a thin value three bet. And I think it works totally fine to use a thin value three bet and be able to fold to a four bet. It's actually going to potentially save you more money if you're saying like, just call it. Okay, well, they have kings and you play out the rest of the hand and you still lose. But this time you lost nine big blinds pre. So like there's always this form of like hindsight's 20/20 to try and rationalize yourself into incorrect decisions. I think this is still a value three bet that when we get this action, we can fold to our opponent's four bet. It does not mean that all of our value has to call off their raises.
Yep. I think that's a great way of putting it. I guess if we had a note that, you know, a player was likely, like, much more likely to four bet than average if they like four bet all the time. That might change some of the hands that we would choose to three bet. But just the chance that they're going to four bet us, I agree with you, Taylor, is not important enough to give up the edge, the value that you gain by increasing the pot with a very strong hand like pocket jacks.
Yeah. And then to hit back on one more thing, because I just have to now, and then we can move on, I swear. Rob was asking, you know, do we ever have a three bet and then call range? If we do have a spewy opponent that will bluff into us relentlessly, I will have those calls in there. I will give them rope and let them keep bluffing into me with a lot of my hands in that spot. Because once an opponent puts in a four bet and I've got aces or kings, I'm just buckling up and saying, bring the bets, send all the bets at me, and I'll go from here. So yep. There is an instance.
And I agree. That's a very specific, against a very specific opponent. Yeah. But if you were just to look at all the charts out there, you know, go to your GTO Wizard or GTO Plus or wherever, you get your ranges and you look at them, and they're just very few hands that you can actually put into a three bet.
100% agree. Yep.
All right, good. Well, I enjoy these little rabbit holes that we, so much of it does depend on the assumptions that you make about your opponents, but I think in a vacuum, I think we've covered that really well. So odd situations beget odd situations. So we're in a pre-flop four bet pot that doesn't come up very often. And so we end up in this flop spot that also we don't find ourselves in very often. So the button also calls the four bet, which I think continues to, you know, inform our sense of what their range is. It's those sort of like middle to high pocket pairs at this point, almost exclusively. The flop is ace of spades, king of spades, 10 of spades. And our correspondent, again, is holding the jack of spades and the jack of diamonds. So we've got third pair. We've got a redraw to a Broadway straight. We've got a redraw to a flush. We've got a redraw to the straight flush. And we're feeling pretty good about the equity we have in the hand. The original play under the gun razor bets 26 and a half big blinds, which is a little less than half pot, and it's on us. So here's what John says. Our correspondent writes, I've got one out to the stone nuts, eight other outs to the second nut flush, and another three queens to a Broadway, which is likely either good or a chop. I could already be facing a flush or three of a kind. I beat all the flushes but one if I make the flush, because the queen high, the queen of spades is still out there, and beat all the sets if I flush or catch the straight. But I'm likely dead to rights to at least a set if I miss. And I think our opponent's four betting range definitely has aces, kings, and ace king. So I don't think a jack, you know, helps us as much as it typically would in a spot like this. I think we're not trying to beat sets. We are trying to straight or flush our way to victory here, which does make sense to me. Let's leave the rest of John's description here for a moment. Let's just talk about the spot here, Taylor and Rob. So we're in this unusual circumstance. We did call. We've got pocket jacks. It's ace, king, 10. And someone leads into us for a little less than half pot and about half our stack. We've got a little more than that back. Is anyone folding? Is anyone calling? Is anyone raising? And why? What are our favorite lines to make here? And what are the factors that might lead us to that decision, Taylor?
Yeah, it's an uncomfortable spot, but I think we have a pure math decision here. When we get to this point, it's relatively simple to like figure out where we're at. We've got 56 and a half bigs. There's 67 in the middle. Opponent makes a bet of roughly 27. Do we call? Do we fold? Like, do we have the right price? I think it's very clear that we should not be really including Jax as outs. And to include the potential of getting quads with Jax is probably the only way of like really conceivably like thinking about this. There's a chance that they have ace king and then a jack would be good. So maybe like some like small credence to it. But I think generally speaking, the much cleaner way for us to get there is to hit a flush or to hit a straight. How clean are our flush outs really becomes the question here. And I'm going to argue our flush outs are incredibly clean. The ace of spades is out there. The king of spades is out there. The only hand or card we're really concerned about is if our opponent has the queen of spades, which one, do they make the four bet preflop with queens? You could maybe give that some credit or say it might not even be likely. But would they also make this flop bet with queens having just the queen of spades? Then you're also getting a little bit wearisome. So to me, I think the flush outs are incredibly clean. I think we can almost count on all of them to make our hands. And likewise, the queen hitting a queen should almost for sure let us scoop the pot. I know John makes the comment that we might at least chop. We've never talked about any of our opponents having jacks outside of the button cold calling. And it would have to be exactly jack-jack, which we block. And I doubt that they're going to come with in this pot, because if we had jacks without the jack of spades, this is an incredibly easy fold for us to make. So kind of don't have to worry about that. All the straight outs should be very clean. So then we're talking, we've got nine flush outs. We've got four straight outs. Should be relatively simple math then. Like you got 13 outs twice. What's that rough equity? It's more than enough to call in this spot. I don't know what the exact numbers are in terms of 13 outs twice, but with a 1-to-1 stacked pot ratio, there's another 50 left behind.
Flop, don't you take your outs and multiply them by four?
Yeah, the rule of two and four, roughly.
It gets a little bit hairy because if they do have a set, like they have counteracting outs to go along with it. But generally speaking, we're probably in the 40% equity range.
I would think so, yeah.
Which, with 67 in the middle and 56 back, like we're going with it. We only would need 33%. To make this a profitable call. So with that much of an equity plus, I think this is an easy call, although you are getting it in with less than 50% equity. So like you're going to lose it more than you win it. I think now that we're at this spot, we're there.
Do you just call there or do you just go ahead and put it in?
Very good question. I would just call. Because on the chance that we call flop and it checks through on the turns and we brick all of our outs, we can comfortably fold rivers and save ourselves the 20, 30 big blinds that we would still have in our stack.
Okay. Yeah.
It comes down to how much fold equity do we have? I think we have zero, essentially zero. Right. So it's might as well just play it passively, but in just hope for the chance that, it goes check, check on the turn, which probably not, but there is a chance. I'll hold out hope.
One of the things that Taylor was talking about, sort of counting how clean your outs are. I do think, the button could have pocket queens, I guess, if they chose not to forebet that free flop. Like you say, maybe the under the gun has pocket queens. Would they lead out on this? I don't know. That's really the only way I can see the queen of spades being in play right now, because when you can see the ace, king, jack, and 10, that means that if they had the queen of spades with another card, the best hand they could have would be queen nine suited. And I don't think they're playing that under the gun the way that this player has. And I don't think they're cold calling a three and a four bet with queen nine suited or worse either. So I really do think that just you can clean those right up and feel like those are good outs.
Exactly. Yeah. The only way they have queen of spades is pocket queens.
Yeah.
And on the odd chance that button cold calls with ace queen offsuit. I'm kind of discounting that. I feel like the ranges are relatively set here. However, I will say the one hand that we don't want to see is pocket queens with the queen of spades. Like everything yes. else we have decent equity against. As soon as our opponent has the queen of spades, all our equity goes out the window. So I think the fact that we don't believe our opponent has queen, queen, specifically with the queen of spades, like makes it a call. But if there is that chance that they have the queen of spades here, like all of our equity is gone.
So our correspondent, John, agrees with us for the most part here and says, I half-heartedly convince myself that this is too strong to fold at any point with this SPR. And I think we would agree with that. You're actually getting the right odds to continue, given your straight and flush outs that are available and then the price that you're given. And John says, so I use whatever fold equity I might have, and I know it's not a large amount, and shove for the remaining portion of my stack, which is a little more than the raise was in the first place. This is, you know, we talk about fold equity. Fold equity isn't just a function of putting a lot of chips in. Like, it's also a function of the range of hands that your opponent has. In certain circumstances, they're going to have wide ranges, which means that your fold equity is more helpful. Like there's more, it'll affect more of their range. In a spot like this, like they'd have to have some bluffs, I guess is what I'm saying, for us to have some fold equity here when we shove. In a four bet pot like this, Taylor, Rob, I'm kind of curious your thoughts. I don't see them having a lot of bluffs available. Like it would be one spade hands, and we've already gone through how rare those are. And I don't see them turning like one pair of hands into a bluff here. This just feels like it has to be a value bet, which means that we don't have maybe we don't have any fold equity. Is that an overstatement?
Correct. I think the only fold equity we have is against hands that we beat. In right. the sense that potentially our opponent is a crazy psycho and they can, you know, they love the deuce three offsuit, or, you know, they have a hand that they love to play. Like if that's the case and we know that that is a potential, then we potentially do have some fold equity, but it's against hands that we beat. There's no hand, like we're never getting better to fold. So it seems irrelevant.
Rob, did you have something there?
Oh, I was just gonna agree. We don't have any fold equity. We may have fold equity against the button, you know, when he's sitting there with his pocket nines.
Right.
But other than that, the original raiser and the four better, we have no fold equity with him at all. He's gonna call whatever we do.
Yeah, I can think of maybe if they had like exactly the ace five of clubs or the ace five of diamonds that they like chose to have a suited ace five in their four betting range. They've made top pair, but they're not comfortable with it. It's just such a small, I mean, and are they even doing that in these ignition tournaments for $15? Like I'm not sure that they're four betting with non.
Yeah, I do. I think there's one specific spot with where you talk about like fold equity, and I guess that would be if the button has exactly 10-10 here.
Mm-hmm. Oh, if, yeah, that's interesting. Bottom set,
bottom set on a three flush board. Does 10-10 find a fold if we jam? And maybe that's like the only like bit of fold equity that I can muster up, but like it's probably not even worth considering.
And it doesn't really solve our problem because then the undercut players, yeah. like they're still the ones that are going to have the better hand than us.
Yeah, we don't have enough fold equity against two hands.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah.
All right. So, so John, this would be something for John to consider then, I think, is this like, what is fold equity? Like, and how do we actually express it? And it's mostly about like semi-bluffing when our opponents have hands in their range that they're likely to fold. I don't think this is a good spot for that, but I get what he's thinking. And you also hear these rules like, you know, don't put half your stack in unless you're going to put the other half of your stack in or something like that. And I think just people need to understand these are general rules and there's always going to be times to deviate from them. Taylor kind of laid it out. There is a path to you not putting that other half of your stack in here. If you call and the button calls, if the turn does check around and you get to see that river card, you're never ahead without improving. And so you can just comfortably fold. And I don't think it's going to be hard to get paid for that last one. Because even if a four straight or a four flush comes on the board, like there's going to be a lot of money in here relative to everyone's stack already. Plus you've got the progressive bounty on, sitting on your shoulders, making you even more callable. So I think it is a call. And I like the reasons that you guys talked about it. So I'll just give results here. So John does reshove, the button folds, and the original razor calls. John says, I was pleasantly surprised to see the villain turn over ace of hearts, king of clubs for two pair, and which actually gives us two more outs, if you think about it, because now our jacks are good. The turn is the queen of clubs, giving us Broadway, and the river is the nine of hearts, which bricks out and does not improve the other player's hand. So we have a big pot. We win 170 big blinds and gives us the lead in the tournament. But this is what I love about John. He says, but results aside, I'm not at all comfortable with how I played the hand. And I feel like I was handcuffed at almost every decision except the initial three bet. And I'd say, John, that's correct. That seems to be what the panel here also agrees with. A couple, you know, unusual spots. And those unusual spots can be uncomfortable spots, even if for no other reason. John finished in 13th place with $44 in prize money and about $24 in bounties. So congratulations, John, on cashing the tournament. But the real congratulations is for finding an interesting spot like this to share with Rec Poker Nation. And there's some great responses in the forum post here from Eric Jin, who goes by Binkley, 5x5, our own Chris Jones, none other than Rabman50 here in the panel, Eric Anderson, who goes by eAnderson85. I love Eric's responses. He always includes some really interesting screen grabs and graphs. And he's done that here as well, showing a few examples of ranges that might take various actions. So it's just great being able to scroll through all these wonderful questions and answers and examples. And I'll put the link to this forum post in the show notes as well. So if you're listening along, you don't even need to have a free account to read the forum post. So if you're interested in seeing some more details about this, just click on the link in the forum post and you'll enjoy that. Taylor?
Yeah, so I did run some equity here quick after all this chat just to see where we're at with things. Against Ace-King, we have 47.5% equity.
Amazing. Tons.
So a great spot for us to be in. I think worst case scenario is they have pocket aces. Mm-hmm. Against that, we had 36% equity.
Wow.
Which I think still given the price and everything, like that's the right price for a call. Even if they flip over aces, I think we're supposed to call there. Again, we just don't want them to have queen with the queen of spades. Like that's the dead scenario. But if you weigh the potential of them having aces with, you know, our 36% equity, king is the same equity. And then the chance that they have ace king with us having 47.5%, I think this makes it an easy call.
And don't forget, folks, those unpaired hands, those combos add up real quick. So if you're thinking about, oh, well, they could have aces or kings, or they could have ace king, going by the numbers, they're much more likely to have ace king in those circumstances, just by the way that the combos break down. So the more unpaired hands like that, ace king, ace queen, that you can add into their range, the less and less likely it is that they have that premium pocket pair, and that makes a big difference when you're looking at equity, as Taylor pointed out there.
Just for the laughs, if they had queen with the queen of spades, we have 7% equity.
I was gonna ask you about that because that's such an interesting spot. Like that's actually the worst hand for them to have.
It's, exactly.
You'd much rather them have a set of aces or a set of kings than to have a pair of queens with the queen of spades with our exact hand. That's remarkable. Yeah.
I just want to say, based on my comment to John, most of the time you win a big pot, what do? You smile and say, look at all the chips I have, and go on to the next one and not think about the decisions that got you there. Mm. So I want to recommend to John and anybody else who finds themselves in very difficult spots, regardless if you win or lose, if it's a difficult spot, bring it up. Let's talk it through. Let's understand what makes it difficult, why the decisions are so difficult. Let's talk about it. That's what the forums are all about, right?
That's right. That's right. And no one learns from posting spots that they understand perfectly. You know, you only get better by asking questions that you don't know the answer to, by posting hands and spots like this that you need some help to figure out. And there's not a friendlier group of helpful, serious recreational players out there than you can find here at Rec Poker. So I couldn't agree more. The last comment I'll leave here comes from Eric Anderson. And I'm curious, Taylor and Rob, what your thoughts are on this. He says, I love the implied odds of a royal flush draw. and I think some players will make a call, and I'm guilty of this. I'm not even sure if guilt is the right word for it, but if I have a royal flush draw, I'm a little stickier than if I just have a straight draw or just a flush draw or a combo draw. Is that true for you guys as well? There's this allure of the royal flush. Does it make you want to stick around even more?
It's a trickier one, even like to like find folds with, especially with like straight flush draws. Like, right. Say you've got, you know, four to a straight flush, but it's, you know, four through eight or something like that. And you've got like the seven and you need the five or whatever it is, but it's like, what's the likelihood someone has a bigger club? You have to hit that one exact card to like hit the nuts, but it does look a little bit more appealing to have that like unbeatable hand. There's something tricky about those. It's literally one out.
Yeah.
It's a psychological thing. It's a psychological thing, right? You're looking at the possibility of a straight flush. How often do you get a straight flush or a royal flush? I don't think I've ever even had a royal flush ever. So, I mean, I've had a king high straight flush, which I was very excited about. But yeah, I think what I would, and I know I've folded Dutch shot straight flush draws before, just because the other outs that would help me would also kill me from the other players.
Exactly.
Because I'd be so far behind everybody else. So it's yeah. But psychologically, you want to call.
You do. It's true. It's true. And there are some other benefits. I was playing at Running Aces the other day and turned a straight flush. And I turned that into a little merchandise credit voucher that the poker room was happy to. I don't have it in front of me now, but I got a snazzy new Running Aces hat that I would never have gotten if I had just made the ace high flush or something boring like that. So you never know what other kind of equity there is out there. And, you know, if you get that royal flush, you can be telling stories about that for years. You're going out for dinner on that one for a while. Rob's still waiting for his. He's been playing poker professionally for 340 years. It's amazing. Still hasn't hit that straight flat royal flush. But Taylor and Rob, thank you so much for another fantastic conversation. Picking it up here in the free Rec Poker forums. I want to thank you. Of course, I want to thank the Running Aces Hotel, Racetrack, and Casino, our sponsor, for all the great stuff that they put on. I want to thank John Crowell, 7High11, for his fantastic post, and everyone else for posting in the forums. And you, the listeners, we couldn't do this without you, so keep it up. And thanks for tuning in for another episode of the Rec Poker Podcast.